Blog Talk Radio.
President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen, I do declare this is the Philosophy Show, episode number 145. My name is Thomas, your host, and today is June 30th, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, Wednesday night, 2016. The show is every Wednesday night, Thursday morning, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The phones are open. This is a rated G show. Anyone can call in. That's G for great. And you can find us at blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. And the guest call-in number, if you want to call in, is area code 646-929-1344. That's area code 646-929-1344. And I would say tune in, turn on, and think. Today's episode title is The Next President of the United States, Ladies and Gentlemen, I Do Declare. Now, this is a half an hour show. We can push it into 15 minutes of overdrive if we need to, but it's a half an hour show. It's a call-in show. It's live. This is about philosophy, and so that gives us pretty much the full range of options here at our disposal. And today, I'm going to go through your possibilities here for presidents of the United States so far, most likely. And I guess since a half an hour show, I'm going to spend about 5 minutes on each one. This is going to be objective analysis. I'm not going to favor any one over another. I'm just going to explain each individual, their strengths, their weaknesses, and what kind of strategy they could use to win. And this might give you some information, something to think about. So we're going to talk about Trump, Donald Trump, Clinton, Hillary, Rodham Clinton. And we also, I'll spend a few seconds on Bernie Sanders, and then Jill Stein, as well as Gary Johnson. Okay, and those are your options. And there's other people running for president, but those are the ones that have a statistical chance to win. So a realistic. So let's start with Donald. He's the Republican nominee. He has one of the highest unfavorability ratings right now, although he did obliterate his Republican competitors, his contentions, which was quite impressive. I mean, he was in a field of about 12 or 13. You know, it's kind of a sign that people are not sick of the establishment. A conspiracy theory is Donald Trump really is just a Hillary Clinton tool, and he's just going to blow the election so she can win, because he is very supposedly close to the Clintons. He doesn't sound like he is, but he's very convincing. It's like a WWF, you know, a stage wrestling fight. They're pretending like they hate each other, but they're really in cahoots together. Now, his main thing is, he has said some things that are impressive, like for a Republican, that he's against the wars, which I think that's or they're mishandled, and we shouldn't have gone in Iraq in the first place. He has said some things in the past that we should have Medicare for all, and we should legalize cannabis, and I think those are very mainstream views. And if he kept saying those things, and says that, and if he took somewhat of the Bernie approach, like, hey, I'm not gonna accept political campaigns. I'm here to be the, you know, establishment breaker-upper that you all wanted, you know. And he even said before that he doesn't want to build a wall and all that, although he's known now for saying that. So, you know, I guess you could say he's flip-flop, but he definitely knows the Republican base and how to win. And then he's also said some kind of demagoguery kind of stuff, like we should ban all Muslims from coming in. Now, that also, you know, they're playing on the fears. I mean, I think that is a little extreme. Maybe it's just kind of reactionary. I mean, of course, we should vet people and stuff like that. And one of the main things that we, you know, I mean, to be quite honest, this whole Middle East thing is like, if we never started going into the Middle East after World War II because of the oil there, there wouldn't be any problems with the Middle East now whatsoever. I mean, you know, we started toppling regimes starting with Iran, and I mean, that's just a fact. You can look up that history. You know, NATO, United States, history of Middle East involvement. I mean, you know, anyways, so that's Donald Trump. And right now he's kind of, you know, he's been falling in the polls, but I think it's going to go back up and down. He was ahead in the polls, and who knows? It's like a wild card. It's hard to tell a little bit. I mean, in some ways, I like him. Some ways, I think he's a little bit, or he is a demagogue. And but he, at the same time, is he worse than Hillary Clinton? So, or better than? And he does have some promising things, but who knows if he's just going to stay true to his heart, if he has one, and how he's going to handle this whole political game of three-dimensional chess. So now, let's move on over to the next contender, Hillary Rodham Clinton, who's been running for president or dreaming about it either since she was a little kid. She's like that guy from Lord of the Rings, like, my precious, she wants the presidency so freaking bad, just kind of like Al Gore did. She'd do anything to get there, and or she really decided to make it a yearning after her husband was, and this is just a competition thing, and, you know, because he kind of ruined their legacy with the Monica Lewinsky, she just has this drive to do it, and she has, you have to admire the drive. She became Senator of New York after being First Lady, which isn't really a qualification, but Senator of New York is, and then she was Secretary of State. Now, some people say she's the most qualified. That's not true. There's been plenty of people who have had a lot more positions than those. Although I wouldn't say on record she's not qualified, but, you know, our public servants aren't, the record shouldn't be as much. I mean, your record should matter, but not as, that should actually matter more than the positions that you've held and the titles that you've held, I'll say. And so, now, she's in the stage of picking a vice presidential candidate, it looks like, running mate. And I've seen her on the trail with Elizabeth Warren, and Elizabeth Warren might be a redeeming factor for her. I mean, the only way I would consider personally voting for Hillary Clinton is if she selected Elizabeth Warren, and because Elizabeth Warren is kind of like that outsider. I mean, one thing it seems like Hillary doesn't understand, and this is some strategy for her, is this is the year of the outsider. And that's what Rand Paul didn't understand at the beginning. Like, he was using the strategy that he thought would have worked 4 years ago. It's different now. It's different now. And that's what and it might, it's going to be different 4 years from now. I mean, things change constantly. You can't use the same sales pitch style. You have to know it constantly evolves. It can evolve every day. But in her campaign is we work together. You know, she's kind of calling out Trump a little bit on the demagoguery. Now, her record is really not that populist, I'll say, or popular. I mean, she was for all the big trade deals like NAFTA, GATS, now this TPP thing where we want to normalize trade relations with, like, most of Asia. And it's good to trade, no doubt. But trade deals are written by big corporations for big corporations. Number one, they're not transparent. No one hardly can read them. They're so big, no one can understand them. And there's so many rules after people can read what little there is that says that it's a ripoff for the people. So, and it's, you know, so she's for that. She was for the Iraq War, which has been the biggest blunder in U.S. history almost, that has costed trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, while we make up excuses all the time why we don't have enough money to build our crumbling infrastructure or invest in education. And she doesn't seem like she's against the drug war. And she seems so fake, honestly. She just seems so fake in that she'll say anything, and I don't feel any sincerity there. But if she picks Elizabeth Warren, who's the opposite of all those things, which insiders have warned that she shouldn't pick, but she actually should if she wants a shot at winning, if she wants to secure her, you know, that would help. That would go a long, long way. I would actually consider, because before this, there's no way in hell I would ever consider her, but if she picks Elizabeth Warren as the vice presidential running mate alongside her, I would consider it. Now, I mentioned Bernie Sanders, and some people think he's not in the running anymore, but he still hasn't opted out yet. He hasn't cried uncle. He hasn't tapped out yet, because there is a criminal indictment looming over Hillary, which she could get indicted for, possibly. There's a criminal investigation, I guess I could say. And if that happens, he'll become the nominee. So it'd be stupid for him to give up running right now. And you never know what could happen. I mean, she could have a stroke or who knows what. So, yes, I would stay in as Bernie Sanders. He could be the nominee. And he should use his leverage and take this as far as he can. He might even run still and make a pitch to the superdelegates that they should elect him instead of Hillary Clinton. And he's the one who had the most popular vote. I almost feel convinced that this election system is somewhat rigged. There has been, you know, the actual polls not matching the exit polls, which are usually accurate up to 2%, but if they are found to be inaccurate over 2%, the standards for other countries are that we would consider that a fraudulent election, and that has happened here in the United States this year in the Democratic primary. And not only that, the debates were never on primetime hours. You know, the whole establishment was against Bernie, and so they had a super delegate supporting Hillary the entire time, which gave the impression that she was way ahead than she actually was, which even the Democratic Party tells the media not to report the superdelegates, but the media, like the 5% approval rating organizations they are, reported those anyways, you know. And but I think one main contribution Bernie can do, if he's not the nominee, and even if he is, is instead of campaigning for Hillary Clinton this election season, he should campaign hard for as many progressive candidates and independents, you know, maybe even one or two libertarians that he can, or Green Party candidates, around the nation, and do money bombs, try to support them, you know, where you do campaigns and people call in and donate a lot of money. He has already successfully done that for about, I think, at least 10 candidates. I mean, so he has a lot of popularity, a lot of clout, a lot of leverage, and he should go around the country and campaign for specific people for Congress. Because if we really want to make a change in the United States, we need to change the Congress. The House of Representatives, you vote on every 2 years, not 4 years like the president. And a lot of people forget that every two-year option they have. The House of Representatives are the closest representation there is to the public. And if you want real change, it's probably not going to come from the presidency. It's going to come from the House of Representatives. If you want to end unnecessary wars and cut that offense budget in half to a defense budget where we still would spend more than the next five countries combined, even if we cut it in half. And, you know, and we can start decreasing our debt, taking care of the vulnerable in society, actually investing in education and our infrastructure, and maybe a Medicare for all, which actually would probably save us more money in the long term, and maybe invest in solar and stuff like that. You know, I'd even go farther, have more public banks for the states and for our government, competing with, you know, it's competition, which will keep them honest. And a public option, you know, just like the post office keeps like UPS and FedEx honest, you know, a lot of people think that public options would fail in the free market. I think that they actually keep the free market honest. That's what you need, is a public option that's accountable to voters who all have an equal vote, complete public transparency and oversight by your representatives, and that doesn't have to incur have the unnecessary costs of advertisements and CEO pay, which seems to be a problem, and stuff like that. So now let's go to Gary Johnson. He is the Republican nominee. He's actually going to be on all 50 ballots. The big question is, and he's at 10% now, and if there was a three-way race, you know, he only needs 34% probably to win. So Gary Johnson, the Libertarian candidate who will be on all 50 states, he used to be a Republican, and he won as governor of as a Republican two election cycles in a row. He was the governor of New Mexico, and he served 8 years. So he has a lot of experience, a lot of good experience. He actually started, you know, he needs to realize this is the year of the outsider. He needs to look at some of Bernie's speeches, some of Trump's speeches, and get his mojo going, because he kind of has this, and I'm just giving objective political strategy here, but sometimes he has a little laxical, effeminate kind of way about him, and that's not going to win. I'm sorry. I like him, and I'm probably going to vote for Gary Johnson. I do think he's the best qualified person. I mean, he's totally against the drug war, and he needs to pound that in and give the examples of people that have been hurt by it and take it personally, like as if it was one of his kids that were arrested and he's out for blood to stop this system. A man on a mission is what he needs to do. He needs to transform to a man on a mission. He is very capable. Before he was governor, he started his own business, which I think had 20,000 employees, and he sold it as a success. I mean, he's a self-made person compared to Trump, who everything was handed on a silver or platinum platter in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. And that's Gary Johnson should use that line that I just said there. And he should say Hillary Clinton is crooked Hillary. She voted for the wars. You know, he's using the standard libertarian talking points now of, oh, her answer to everything is government. Well, hey, if you want to appeal to more than 10% of the people, you're not going to use the pitch of getting rid of Social Security and stuff like that. And by the way, you're not going to pass that through Congress anyways. I'd focus on two things: having a reasonable foreign policy and what that will do with our budgets, getting rid of the drug wars. And maybe a third thing, which he does support, is getting rid of the IRS and income tax and setting up a national sales tax. that that would help businesses tremendously, get rid of a lot of red tape. I mean, the sales tax would be a lot better. And auditing every part of the government. And also there's something else he said last year that he would do, which is have an open forum or a way to talk to citizens where they can redress their things. He'll have a lot of town halls. I think that's something that's very, very important. He needs to try to get the same kind of rallies that Bernie Sanders did. He needs to look at a lot of those campaign rallies and pick some of that energy up, that frustration, realize people are sick of it. They're giving the media 5% approval rating. They're giving Congress almost 0% approval rating. That's, you know, Bernie Sanders talking about a political revolution. That's very serious, folks. And, you know, Gary Johnson needs to show the discontent, show that he's qualified as a past governor, as a past business person, that he's not extreme, that he has a legitimate chance to win, that he deserves to be in the debates, that people have a right to hear him. And, you know, he's going to transform America. You know, he's going to make it better than great again. Yes, people work together. He is a future people can believe in, you know, and he needs to pretend like, I mean, he does want to be cool and calm and collective. And the problem with Al Gore and Hillary Clinton is they don't know how to be themselves. So he does want to be himself, but he needs to have that fire in the belly. I mean, which so far he doesn't need have right now. I mean, he needs to pretend, which is this, and it's completely true. His country, which I would say someone really close to him, has been hurt, and he needs to help them. I mean, almost like you have a relative who's in jail and they're dying from cancer, and you want to make sure that, you know, their last couple of months left to live are out in the real world or something, and they were in there for something that shouldn't have been a crime in the first place. You need to have that same kind of passion. You know, he needs to wake up. You know, maybe his drug of choice should be cocaine instead of weed. I mean, even though I think it should be legal. So anyways, he needs to get passionate. That would be my suggestion for Gary Johnson. I would say this would be the year. Like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they both had the highest unfavorability ratings of any two people running in the two major parties ever. There's never been an opening for a third party to come in more than now since Abraham Lincoln, when the Republicans were originally a third party with slavery. That was over 100 years ago, that was over 100 years ago. I mean, since we've had a legitimate third party, there's never, all the ingredients are there. He just needs to do the cooking. He needs to do it. So, God, if he's listening or if anyone's listening, he needs to, you know, not be, he needs to have that fire in the belly. Anyways, let's get to Jill Stein. Now, she I think, is going to be on about 37. Hopefully, and I hope she gets on all 50 ballots. I do think she should be in the debates. She does have a statistical chance to win, because even if you're only on 37 ballots, if you win all of those, you have a statistical chance to win. You know, honestly, for me, you know, she is for getting rid of all student debts. I mean, her argument is if we can bail out the banks and bail out government contractors in the tunes of trillions of dollars with these wars and et cetera, then, you know, it'd be a drop in the bucket, actually, to get rid of the student debt and have universal education. And, you know, she's for a reasonable foreign policy. She's for ending the war on drugs. She's for helping small businesses. And she's for Medicare for all. And she's for stimulating the jobs markets with a guaranteed job. Now, I think she's an honorable person, very intelligent. And if she was president or Gary Johnson, even though they both have somewhat contradicting views on some things, there are a lot of main issues they have similarly. And they're both for civil liberties and privacy. I wish almost Gary Johnson would choose Jill Stein. I mean, that would be a transpartisan ticket that they might be able to, just for 1 year, try to make an impact. And I hope both of them, either if one of them breaks through, that they would help any other future third party or independents at least have a fair chance. And so you know, Jill Stein, I give her due. Now, if she even gets up to 5% of the votes in 4 years from now, her party, the Green Party, will have matching funds. And there's a lot of Green Party people running in congressional districts across the U.S., as well as libertarians and independents. And I would definitely give them a second look. I mean, because, again, in the House of Representatives, if you don't want to take a risk on a third party for president, you might do that for your House of Representatives, and it's less of a risk. And it's, believe me, a lot less of a risk than choosing the same old status quo where we're going trillions of dollars in debt, are in an unending entanglement overseas that's just getting worse and worse and worse. If you don't like the immigration, it's because of the wars over there. If you don't like instability and the prospects of World War III, then let's get out of the Middle East. Let's get out before we fix it, before we do any more harm. We've been in Afghanistan's the longest running war in U.S. history. And so we're getting more debt, which is going to raise our taxes, which is going to reduce our, you know, social safety nets like Social Security, and we're not going to be able to invest in infrastructure. So we need a change rapidly, and we need it in the right way, in the democratic way, not in the demagoguery way. You know, we need to know our ideals and work together and be united. And honestly, if I was running for president of the United States, you know, I would run on a guaranteed annual income, because, I mean, it's inevitable that automation is going to take most of our jobs anyways. What are we going to do then? Raise minimum wage? No, it's not going to work, and that's inevitable. The guaranteed annual income is inevitable. It's eventually going to be an idea whose time. And that is the most logical thing, and I've written a big article about that. You can just Google guaranteed annual income, an idea whose time has come, and you'll bring up an article from Libertarian Progressive. And who knows, maybe 4 years from now, you know, there are some things in the, although I've never run for anything, and I would probably possibly one day run for Congress, and I think you out there should give it a try, or for something local, because there's never been an opening more than there is now if there's still enough time for you to do it. Usually you have to do it months before. But, you know, the president who's going to be president elected in 2016 will be the 45th president. In 2020, if there's a chance, on election day, I will turn 46, and that will possibly be the 46th president. So you never know. My birthday will be on Election Day. I will turn exactly 46, and then there will be the 46th president. I don't know. Maybe those are all lined in the stars. So I'm just saying, I'm kind of saying that in jest, but if things get really bad, maybe people will be up for the guaranteed annual income, and someone who's never run for any office before. Although I would have a chance to run for Congress before that. Anyways, we got 90 minutes remaining. I mean, this has been the Philosophy Show, episode number 146. I mean, 145. Anyways, I'm sorry. Yeah, and people, I don't know, shouldn't look at the stars for the answers. They should look at, you know, obviously the truth and logical analysis, etc. Anyways, thank you for listening today. Call in with ideas for a show, etc. Call in to talk. We can talk about anything, relationships, but this has been the next President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. And I do declare, and so I hope you enjoyed this episode, found it useful. You know, there is still hope. We can all just plant those seeds, and they will grow into big old, you know, redwoods. So anyways, this has been another episode of The Philosophy Show.
Clouds, they were rolling through the sky, and they brought down all the rain. And there was a puddle that became a pond as it gathered up so much rain. Little seed close by grew into a tree as it soaked up so much rain.